Two questions on today's episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Hampus wonders about exposure compensation when using auto ISO in manual mode, and Colin wonders how local laws have an influence on the planning of photo tours. Also, my drone has died. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 840 for Thursday, September the 13th, 2018. Hey, hello and welcome. It's Chris again, and you're listening to Tips from the Top Floor, episode 840. You know what? I'm sad. My drone is dead. Yeah, the Mavic Air that I bought in May is no more. It's sad, isn't it? When I started it up in Ireland, that's where I took it to Ireland, because Ireland is one of the most liberal countries when it comes to drone regulations, and if you look up the legalities of flying a drone there, it pretty much says don't be a dick, right? Be nice, be considerate, respect privacy. I mean, it's a bit more clear-cut than that, but that's pretty much what it feels like. Don't be an idiot. And when I started the drone up in Ireland, first day there, it was beautiful weather. The drone warned me that its processor was overheating. And it has a fan inside to keep it. There's a lot of processing in a drone these days. Lots of image recognition, obstacle avoidance. It's managing 2, 4, 6, 7 cameras or something. There's a lot of heat being generated, so it has a fan inside, and that apparently doesn't spin up anymore, which is just a pity, because Ireland, again, is very liberal when it comes to drones, and the landscapes are so amazing too, and we had a few very quiet days, no wind, amazing light. We knew the Atlantic Irish light that I'm not sure I've seen anywhere else, where you have the cloud cover with holes in it, and then that gives the landscape a speckled kind of appearance with these pools of light moving over the landscape, and timing some landscape photography is easy because you can see those things moving, so you can anticipate where that light is going to fall in a minute, and you can be ready and then get just a wonderful picture. And yeah, it was great. It would have been perfect. Anyway, so it's on the way to the repair center. And I Googled, there are some problems with Mavic Airs having exactly that problem. And I'm not sure what it is, but when I wrote to the support, they didn't even ask me to diagnose anything. They were just like, yeah, this needs a repair, send it in. So it sounded like it is not that unusual. Anyway, let's see. It's still under warranty. It should come back, hopefully, be fixed without any cost to me. This is only 4 months old right now, so let's hope for the best. Not a problem for the upcoming tour. I'm recording this right before I go to Norway, to Lofoten. It's not a problem to not have the drone there, because I think you pretty much cannot fly a drone in Norway, as far as I have found out. It's the regulations, but Ireland would have been so amazing. Anyway, let's hope that this is all on warranty. I was thinking, I mean, this would have been some great photography. I'm not even talking videography, I'm talking still photography up from a higher vantage point. The third axis, the Z axis, is something that you do not usually have access to unless you have something that can fly. I'm carrying a spare camera body with me now, but I just wonder, should I carry a spare drone with me? Anyway, hope to have it back soon. Let's dive into today's questions. Here is Hampus again.
Hello again, Chris. Hampus here again with another question for you. When in half automatic modes, we set the shutter speed or the aperture and have the camera control the other one getting a correctly exposed image. If we so choose, we can use exposure compensation to tell the camera to expose, say, one stop under or over what it has calculated. If I am in manual mode, I get to choose both the shutter speed and the aperture. But if I'm using automatic ISO, I can still have the camera calculate what would be a correct exposure. In such a case, if I would want the image brighter or darker, is there a way to still set an exposure compensation, as in the half-automatic modes? Take care, everyone. Bye.
Hampus, thank you so much. Okay, so let me try to unravel this. The half-auto modes, which are aperture priority and shutter priority, and as long as you don't have auto ISO on, as long as that is kind of clamped to a fixed value. If you shoot in aperture priority, the camera does the shutter speed for you. If you shoot in shutter priority, the camera does the aperture for you, and the exposure compensation will compensate. The exposure will pretty much add or subtract some exposure to what the camera thinks is correct. So far, so good. And yeah, the exposure compensation works as expected in those modes. But if you shoot manual, I mean totally manual, okay, so you have the aperture manually set, you set the shutter speed manually, and you set the ISO manually, then yeah, nothing moves, and exposure compensation is just done by changing either of those three parameters. So it's not really exposure compensation, it's just setting a different manual exposure. But now we get to your case. If you are in manual mode, meaning aperture and shutter are set by you, but you have auto ISO on, then you will get the semi-automatic exposure, just that the floating value is the ISO this time and not the shutter speed or the aperture. So it's pretty much exactly the same as aperture of priority or shutter priority, but where one parameter is floating, but in this case it's the ISO. And while it's usually easy to compensate exposure when shooting in aperture or shutter priority, the question is, and that's your question, how do you exposure compensate when using manual mode with auto ISO? And that is a very good question. At least with my Canon cameras, I don't think that's possible, because usually the exposure compensation, at least on the bigger Canon cameras, is on the thumb wheel. So you have a thumb wheel in the back, you have an index finger wheel under your index finger. And when they're set to manual mode, the index finger wheel sets the shutter speed and the thumb wheel sets the aperture. So the go-to place where you would normally do the exposure compensation, the thumb wheel, is occupied by a different function. And the problem is, I think the camera doesn't have an explicit exposure compensation dial. Some cameras do, though, and I assume that if you have a camera that has like a specific dial just for exposure compensation, one that goes 0 plus 1 plus 2 minus 1 minus 2, if you have that, then that would still work for exposure compensation. But again, this is highly camera dependent, so I would suggest you consult your camera's manual for that. Let me say a quick thank you to this week's sponsor, Vistaprint. Being prepared when an opportunity comes up is crucial, and having a business card ready to go in your pocket is the first step to making something happen. With Vistaprint, you can create a truly professional, unique card in minutes, upload your own design, or start with one of their professionally designed options. Vistaprint offers simple tools and a wide range of templates to choose from. Then pick the paper stock style and quantity that is right for you. Choose your delivery speed, then order and receive your cards in as few as 3 days. Your next big opportunity is coming right now, and for as little as $10, you can feel ready to make an impression with a custom card that you choose. With Vistaprint, you can look and feel like a big deal, whether you're a startup or a business with a century of history. Vistaprint wants you to do something great for your business right now, which is why Tips from the Top Floor listeners will get 500 high-quality custom business cards starting at $9.99. Use code TOPFLOOR at Vistaprint.com. That's code TOPFLOOR at Vistaprint.com. TOPFLOOR at Vistaprint.com. Oh, and I would like to also thank you, everyone out there who's listening to this right now, for sending in your questions, because that is what allowed me to pre-produce all these episodes. So you're getting this episode while you're listening this time out in Norway and don't have the time and resources to produce an episode. So your contributions make this work, make this worthwhile. And I just love having your voices on the show because it just makes all the difference. I do read emails from you, but your voices, your actual voices are such a huge differentiator. I'm not sure a lot of other shows do that. And I love keeping that tradition. Even if it means I have to advertise it every now and then, because I know it's easier to just type in a few words in an email and taking your phone and talking into it. It's just a different kind of story, and I do appreciate everyone who does that, and I would like to ask you again to keep doing that, because I truly love hearing your voices here, and it makes a big, big difference. So if you want to get a question in, don't worry. No question is too small to be asked here. Pick up your smartphone, start up your voice recorder, and then send your question to voice@tfttf.com. Thank you so much. Of course, when I say that I don't have the time and resources to record anything up on these tours, it's not quite correct, because I made a little recording with my smartphone in Donegal. All right, it's the first little dispatch from Ireland, from Donegal, up in the northwest of Ireland. I'm out with the photo group. We're standing above the sea. You can hear the water and the wind. And we're standing on high up on the cliffs above a sea arch that is only known to the locals. And without my friend Trevor, who is a local and who is a photographer who's been scouting all the coasts here, without Trevor we wouldn't know about this sea arch. And it's only available, there's no trails, no nothing. You have to go through some farmer's field to get there. Now I'm up here with a tripod, and hear this rustling noise here? Yeah, that is a shower cap that is over my camera right now, because there's a bit of a gale coming in. The weather is very Atlantic coast. Clouds are opening up, but first 3-4 minutes of rain, and then it's closing down again. And while the rain is coming down, it's just a drizzle, but while it's coming down, I just have this simple hotel shower cap over the camera, over the lens, just to keep it dry, to not have to wipe it down too much. In addition to that, I also carry a microfiber cloth in my pocket, a big one, like the ones you would use for the kitchen. That's pretty much what I bought in the grocery store, just some simple kitchen towels. I think so, about 10 inch size, perfect in the pocket. You can wipe down the camera in a weather like this, and then it'll dry in no time. So it's kind of indispensable. That and the shower cap up here at the wild Atlantic coast. Signing off from Donegal for now. All right, Donegal is behind us, but let's look forward to new things to come. And here is Colin with a very interesting question.
Hi, Chris. First, I'd like to thank you for the last time I sent in a question, and you gave me advice on how to help my photography students. It was most useful, and they enjoyed the little project. The question I had for you was surrounding, you have previously done tours of Nepal, and I was wondering if with the new change in the rules, law, in Nepal regarding photography, if that would affect your future plans. And then a more general question, do the laws surrounding photography affect how you would design a photo tour? Anyway, thanks for the answer to my previous question, and thank you for all the wonderful podcasts.
Thanks, Colin. So glad that the little project was cool for students. Is there anything online? I would love to be able to see what they did. But anyway, when Colin sent in his voicemail, I wasn't sure what the changes were in the Nepal photography laws. So I sent him a little mail back and asked him to send me a link, which he did. Thank you, Colin, for that. And it turns out there were changes, but they affect pretty much photojournalists only at this point. I will link to that in the show notes. So, and it's probably why I haven't heard of it before. And it does not affect us as tourists. But the question, Colin, is, of course, what about future tours and how do these local laws affect the planning and the design of tours? And there pretty much can only be one answer, and that's not to break the laws, because I want to come back to these countries and I want to obey whatever they proclaim about photographers. And of course, that always kind of depends on the kind of photography. Example, okay, just an example. On a previous tour to Ireland, for example, there are rules and laws regarding drone photography, and those need to be obeyed. And in Ireland, they are quite liberal. As I said earlier, I couldn't because the drone broke, but they are quite liberal, so that gives you more freedom. But there are also countries where drone photography is not an option. And of course, I make sure to first of all, research these things and then communicate that to the people who want to book the tour. It's always on the According webpage if there's anything to be completely, that needs to be followed. But then there is that gray area, not a legal gray area, but I mean, the same goes for rules of taking pictures of people. And when a tour comes up that is more people photography centric, then those according rules need to be followed. But you know, the laws are one thing. Again, we get to the gray area. What I consider more important, not that the laws aren't, but is what is socially okay and acceptable. I think that is crucial, because the last thing I want to do is be a pain in the neck of the people of that country while still not breaking a law. And you can easily do that. I mean, there are countries where sticking a camera in someone's face and taking a picture without their consent is okay. But for me personally, it is never okay. I want people's consent when I take their pictures, not just for myself and for my own well-being, but for the well-being of future photographers. Because if you behave like a dick and take pictures where you're not supposed to, socially supposed to take pictures, then you will spoil this for everyone else. And I do not want to be that person. And I appreciate other photographers who come before me to treat people with respect and to treat people the way they need to be treated. And I mean, I've seen photographers being quite insensitive to the local population just to get their shots. And I don't like that. So usually one of my first questions before I even think of planning a photo tour is, what is socially acceptable? Are people happy with their pictures being taken? How much photography would be seen as an intrusion? Is communication possible? If yes, how? You know, I mean, being able for or asking for permission goes a long way. And I generally ask when taking a picture of someone, or I will show them a picture if I took a candid shot, if it's allowed. And that communication doesn't necessarily have to be verbally. You know, you can make eye contact, point to your camera, make a questioning face. And that is universally understood as, can I take your picture? And the reaction will be very clear. Of course, there's also the chance of maybe some banter. I remember that one scene, vividly remember that one scene in Ethiopia. We were at one of these roads where they take lots of lorries on and or trucks on trucks in the US, lorries in England, where lots of these trucks are and the truck drivers have kind of a truck stop village thing with lots of shops and things. And we got out there to get some water, and there was this one truck driver who in the corner of my eye saw him sneak a picture of me, which was he took out his he had even not even just a smartphone, a small compact camera, and he snuck a picture of me very candidly. He thought I didn't see him, but then I turned around and I took this as a bit of a possibility for some banter, because then I looked at him with like a more of a mock annoyed look in my face, like, are you sure you're supposed to take a picture of me? No verbal communication. But then I eased up and I gave him a smile. And then he eased up because he noticed that I wasn't mad at him for doing that. He was quite shy. And then I pointed at my camera and at him and gave him a signal to him that it's only fair if he took my picture. I will be able to, I'm allowed to take his picture, which he then happily posed for, and then we took a selfie together, and it was a bonding experience. It was a cross-cultural bonding experience that I will never forget, because it was great and he will never forget. And it's just one of these things that that you can do, but only if the situation is right, only if the communication around it is okay, and if there is consent to take that picture. So another fun fact, if you haven't been to Nepal, for example, the communication can be interesting. Nepal or India, you might have to learn that in some Asian countries, a nod is not a nod. A nod goes sideways. They tilt their head sideways. And it means yes. It means uh-huh, sure. So that if someone gives you permission to take their photo with that sideways nod, you might not interpret this as a yes, you might interpret that as a no, because it is similar to shaking your head. It happened to me. So you have to learn the communication of that country too. And that's the kind of cultural exchange that I'm all happy about, because that's what makes for memorable experiences. And the most important way to communicate is the smile. The smile is one of the most universal ways to tell the other person, I'm friendly, I don't mean harm. All right, that was it for this episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Thank you so much for listening. If you're listening to this just on the webpage, fine, but this would be so much easier if you had Tips from the Top Floor subscribed in your podcast client. Just search for it. It's pretty much everywhere you get your podcasts, and then you'll automatically get the episodes whenever a new one comes out, and you won't have to do the website hassle anymore. Also, if you like this episode, let me know by giving the show a rating on iTunes. Again, the most important place in the world to let others know that a podcast is worth listening to. This trickles down to all the podcast clients, because they all use the iTunes directory. Or support Tips from the Top Floor in any other way. There's Patreon, there's word of mouth, there's tons of different ways. Tips from the Top Floor depends on your support, and every bit helps. More at tfttf.com/support. Thank you so much. You're amazing. Music for the show by Jeff Smith. Sound partner Hans-Peter Kirkwood. Publishing and Slack Challenges by Release Matt Pixie Armstead. Slack Invitations by Chief Invitation Officer CIO Rusty Russ. And of course, the link to get on the TFTTF Slack and become a Slacker is in the show notes. I want you to discuss. There are so many great discussions and topics over on the Tips from the Top Floor Slack. It's a place where the community can meet in just their own little TFTTF Slack. My name is Chris Marquardt. You'll find me on social media at Chris MARQUARDT. Go out, take amazing photos, be nice to each other, and happy shooting.